Hello, this is Chris Christie. I want to endorse your candidate for dog catcher in Ohio.
That's my Chris Christie impersonation. I could have made him sound stupider.
Yeah, but whose side is he
there,
on?
There wasn't enough chewing.
Yeah. Nom, nom, nom.
We got a snort on that one.
The beaches are closed so I could get better parking.
I have to apologize in advance for the sound in the background.
Their sound?
Well, there was before you called me on the call, and there is potential for sound in the future because we have, okay. You know how you get a package? You know, you get a package, and sometimes they pack the box with big sheets of paper instead of packing peanuts or whatever. Oh, yeah.
Best
okay,
cat toy
so,
ever.
Yes, it is the best cat toy ever, and I made the wrong decision to give them catnip right before the show, thinking, I'm going to distract them with the catnip. No. So now they're chasing each other in the paper.
That's just bonus content.
My living room looks like I live with psychotic toddlers.
Because you do.
Well, it's pretty close.
Hey, Brandon, do you know what my living room looks like?
Psychotic toddlers?
Yes. Yeah. Today, she had just had her birthday. And
happy birthday, La Weirda.
Happy birthday, La Weirda.
She got a fireman's costume.
Oh, awesome.
And
better be a firefighter, you sexist.
She says fireman, and I think it's hilarious.
Don't assume her gender.
Exactly, yeah. That's her preferred firefighting pronoun. and yeah, so she was telling me to call in various fires that were in other various places in our house, and she was going to put them out. That's got a, you know, coat and a hat and a little megaphone that when you push the button makes a siren. We didn't know about that, but daddy put batteries in this because unlike mama, this stuff doesn't really bother me that much. And so she was running around with that. She had a little fire extinguisher and she was putting out fires. And I mentioned to her that you know, firefighters are also EMTs. And so they come and help sick people as well. Because let's face it, houses aren't burning down like they used to. And so I started pretending I was sick. And she goes, oh, what are you sick? I said, oh, I'm having a hard time breathing. And so she pretended to spray me down with water. When your only tool is a hammer.
Yep.
Well, this is episode 260.
Wow.
Look at that. Wow, we've caught up with Alan's age.
Almost.
Alan's almost as old as a turtle. I'm sorry, tortoise.
Tortoise.
Shield toad.
Shield toad.
Shall we talk about the shield toad?
Yes.
Yes.
Who wants? Do you want to lead with a Brita? It was your story.
Well, I noticed on the news today that they are reporting. Okay, there is this tortoise, and he is the oldest.
Shield toad.
He's the oldest in the world, and he's like, wait a minute, I gotta look it up now, and I can't find him.
He's like
296.
86, 96? I don't
something
know. He's
like
he's really old. I mean, like, you know, come on.
Like
he's,
Alan old.
Yeah, I don't think he's quite that old.
Wow.
Let me look it up because I don't want to get it wrong. I think he's like 186.
186, yes.
Why do I remember these things? But so, and his name is Jonathan. And he has been a lonely turtle. Oh, he's 186, yes. And he was a lonely turtle for quite some time. And they thought he was lonely because he was acting out, you know, as tortoises do.
He was
stomp, smash.
Yeah, kind of like he was knocking shit over and he was, you know, being a jerk. And listen, I live with a turtle and they can be jerks on purpose.
But I'm kind of seeing as the, how is that acting out? Or is that kind of, I mean, it's one of those, you've got cats too, and they're also jerks. Because cats are jerks. And hey, guess what? If you have a bird, like if you have a parrot, parrots are just adorably featherly warm assholes. They're just all fucking dicks. They'll be sweet just to lure you into a false sense of security to keep you from drowning them in a tub. But they're dicks. They're just dicks. That's how they are. It's not that they're lonely. It's not that you're not giving them enrichment. It's not that you're doing anything wrong. They are just dickish creatures.
Well, according to the Sun newspaper, it says the locals decided that Jonathan needed a girlfriend because he was being irritable and he was knocking over benches and interrupting croquet games.
I would like to see the biology degrees of the locals.
Yeah, that is the thing. So Jonathan was being irritable, so they got him a girlfriend named Frederica. And this was in 1991. They got Jonathan this girlfriend to, you know, keep him company. And so Jonathan decided, you know, this Frederica was okay for humping and decided that he was gonna hump him, her. Well, they thought at the time that Frederica was female, but upon closer inspection, Frederica might be a boy, which I don't know, because male turtle tortoises, they hump anything that even vaguely resembles another turtle.
Yeah, we had in that other podcast, we definitely spent a good amount of time watching if it was a tortoise or a turtle, but whatever it was a shield toad, and it was consummating with a sneaker.
Right, sneakers, Crocs, frying pans. There's a funny video on YouTube. Go ahead and look it up. It's called, I think it's a frying pan. Tortoise humps a frying pan. But anyway, I lived with a male in college. I lived with a male turtle. He was a three-toed box turtle, tortoise. And he, if you just held him a certain way, his penis would come out and he'd try to hump you. I mean, it was like his cloaca.
Got a turtle.
Yeah, boys are—they're just—they will hump anything. So I have, and so anyway, so they have discovered that Jonathan's lover might possibly be another boy. And so I'm kind of skeptical, because why isn't Jonathan's lover boy also humping things? Because that's what boy turtles do. But aside from that. Now there are multiple news sources are saying this tortoise is gay.
Of course.
They don't have sexual orientation. I mean, like, is the tortoise humping a frying pan? Is he like a frying panian? You know?
I'm watching that video right now.
He's a lot sexual. It is
really awesome. Especially there's some good resonance with the plastron against the Teflon.
Plastron Teflon.
It's a lot of clang. Wah, wah, wah,
yeah,
wah.
Given that a male turtle will hump anything that holds still for it, and,
yes,
and some
much.
Things that won't, then yes. I don't think you can claim that it's gay.
No.
And also, I mean, you've got the whole, like, there are dudes that will have lots and lots of prison sex when they're in the joint, and then they will get out of the joint, and they will go after nothing but ladies, because...
Yeah.
For them, sex with a dude, not their favorite thing in the world, but you know, sex with a dude considerably better than no sex at all. So that's where they lie. So there's a lot of issues with. So I actually did a little background research. I was pretty sure I was correct, and I looked it up, and it is in fact correct that pretty much, if it has what we would consider sex,
tortoises.
Anything, any sort of animal that has specifically internal copulation,
okay,
will have same sex relations. It's been observed in just about everything.
Oh, look at dolphins. They're like turtles. They'll fuck anything.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. But there's all sorts of stuff. I mean, dogs will, you know, I mean, female
oh
dogs
God.
Will
we
female
had female
dogs will mount other female dogs.
Yes, we had two female dogs, and it was so embarrassing. Oh my yeah. God.
Dolphins will get
clearly
dolphins
they were
will get downright Harvey Weinstein on them.
Yes, they will.
Yeah, dolphins are dolphins. They'll actually have gang rape.
Yeah. And so, and sometimes things that aren't even dolphins.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't even care. There's bestiality in the dolphin world.
You know, one thing, I actually put a link to this. I'm going to put a link to this in the, on the post for the show, but there's a great picture of this turtle, Jonathan, from 1900.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
Standing there with a Boer War prisoner and a guard with one of those funky little pith helmets on.
Yes.
Did like you ever have one of those, Alan?
117 years ago. And there's this turtle. And he's an old turtle then. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah, he's, well, old, he's older than both the dudes in the picture combined.
Yeah. At the time of
that
the
is
picture.
A, that is a cool picture. Well,
He's not old by turtle standards.
But well, again, all I got to say is... Especially, I actually didn't I didn't get to the part because I really was just finding myself going, this is so full of shit. Because again, it's one of those like, really? Come on, guys. First off, how do you not know if the tortoise is male? Like, I don't know this species of tortoise and all that, but as a general rule, tortoises are pretty easy to tell.
Yeah, the shape of the shell and
And the location of the cloaca. It's just, it's super. Do you see me try to like decide which pronunciation I was going to do? Am I going to do the standardized one or the Latin pronunciation? I like the Latin. I like cloaca. But either way, it's one of those like, how do you screw that up? Like, is this even real news?
No. Well, it's also, the media is doing that. Oh, even animals are gay.
Right.
And I mean, okay. I can see like maybe higher animals, like maybe a monkey would decide to be gay. I don't know. You know, I can even see
lizards and super duper low animals. I mean, in theory being gay, because
I think gay is a human creation.
Ooh, Alan's going there.
Oh,
I disagree. But
hear me out.
Okay.
The idea that same-sex animals will get it on with each other happens, as you say, happens everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's not strictly gay.
Right.
That's no different than humping a sock or, I mean, it's... Yep.
Well, let me round my statement a little bit more. I didn't get a chance to fully flesh it out. But is that there's certainly, I mean, even within humanity, there is the, you know, horny teenage boys doing gay stuff because they're insanely horny teenage boys and they'll fuck a hole in a brick wall. They don't care. And there's prison sex and there's all of these instances of, you know, quote unquote homosexual behavior, of which there I'm agreeing with you, Alan, is that to label certain things homosexual, you know, just because it is same sex contact is not a fair statement. You know, cause there's circumstances and, you know, things there's other factors, but then meanwhile, when you've got people like my friends, they're two dudes, they live together, they have sex with each other. I'm not sure if they've had sex with other dudes. One of them has had sex with like at least one girl just to try it out. But overall, no, like dudes better. And given their
drugs. I think you've got
people like me, who is one of those like grinders, like the coolest thing on earth. Why would I not take advantage of it? No interest whatsoever. Like I am the idiot for not having the least bit of interest in cock because wow. I mean, talk about hunting over bait.
Yeah. Especially with a beard like yours.
Yeah,
you are a handsome man, Weird.
I'd make a great bear.
You would. You'd be perfect. But I think the gay thing is more of an emotional, psychological thing because, like, you know, people who are gay, they choose to be with the same sex because it fulfills them probably mentally and psychologically in a way that being with, you know, because human beings are more complex than tortoises, obviously. And I don't think tortoises look for that sort of like emotional connection and, you know, this whole fulfillment of the relationship, you know,
I'll say right now, the whole statement that he was getting lonely and antsy is completely bullshit.
Oh, I know. I know, yes.
He was interrupting croquet games, as opposed to the tortoises that respect croquet games.
Yeah.
The tortoise is going to go, oh, shit, chaps, there appears to be a ball in play. Pardon me, playing through. No, a tortoise is going to do what the fuck it... I mean, it's a
yes.
It's a fucking shield toad. Like, yes. They don't give a fuck. You know, it's like right. the 500-pound gorilla line. Where does a 500-pound gorilla sleep? Wherever the fuck it wants, because it is an apex predator. It's the top of its food chain. It doesn't give a shit.
Right. And I think human beings who live with tortoises or turtles and experience that sort of, like, stubbornness that they have of they're just going to do whatever the fuck they want and they don't care about you, we interpret that as, like, oh, my God, they're being a dick. Because, you know, Myra.
So they're turtles, but they're also honey badgers?
Yes.
Let me give you an example.
Are you tortoise-splaining?
Let me give you an example. So I have had Myra for 24 years.
And you got her when you were an infant.
Right. Throughout that time, she has loved earthworms. Like, she would gobble down earthworms like crazy. But this year, for some reason, she has decided that she loves slugs. And all she wants is slugs. And slugs, slugs, slugs. And oh my God, I've seen so much slug murder this summer. But beside that, I have, before I, you know, figured out that Myra only wants slugs, I kind of devised the system inside her, she has a, like, a habitat I created for her outside. And I made this, like, it's like a little compost pile inside her outside house. And so I thought, oh my God, I'm going to do this little compost pile with scraps from the garden, and it's going to be all, like, healthy food for worms to eat, and then Myra will eat the worms, and it'll be, like, awesome. Because I thought, oh my gosh, like, endless supply of worms, right?
Perfect.
She'll love it. But now that she's decided she wants slugs, I will go into the compost pile, the little compost pile, and I'll dig her up some worms, and I will put the worms in front of her, like a gift. Here, Myra, have some worms. She will walk on them, like walk over them and ignore them, because it's not a slug. So, yeah, she's kind of a jerk sometimes.
But by the way, slug murder, you say that like it's a bad thing.
No, it's great.
God, I hate slugs. They're awful creatures.
You know what? It is disturbing how many slugs come up in the lawn after a good rain in summertime. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like disturbing. Like, I could stand in the middle of my yard and there's slugs literally everywhere because they're coming up out of the ground and stuff. Oh my gosh. Or
you get a nice sunny day after a rain, so then it dries and then your just whole lawn just looks like it's covered in pecker tracks.
Oh. Well, anyway, so yeah.
It does look like pecker tracks, doesn't it?
It does, now that you think about it.
You can put them in your garden. They're the worms are useful. That's the nice thing about the slug murder. Is slugs really don't serve any other purpose besides turning into tortoise poop.
Yes, but I don't have any way to propagate slugs. Like, slugs are kind of like their own thing.
Compost will do it. Just turn the compost pile over the evening, and it'll be covered in slugs in the morning.
No.
Really?
I've tried everything. I got lots worms, of worms, though.
It's easy to be a worm rancher. You slug ranching, it ain't so easy.
Oh, is it shaded?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I don't know what to say. I mean, I know my mom, whenever she's, like, gardening and she digs into her compost pile, like, you go in the next day and you can tell where it's freshly dug because it is just slug city.
Huh. I'm sure this is fascinating for everyone listening to the show.
It's a, you mean to tell me it's a slug fest?
It is!
Woo, dad joke, drink.
That was a good one because it really was a slug fest in my yard this year.
Well, slug fest. So speaking of disgusting slugs, Harvey Weinstein has stepped down.
Oh, nice one.
The Weinstein Corporation, and a billion other people have said, oh yeah, no, he raped me too. And so much that there's a hashtag now, hashtag me too, that just says, yeah, no, I was raped by a Hollywood producer, I guess is the, I don't really know.
Me, Me too is the I've been sexually harassed. So basically every human on the planet can put that tag out.
Do you feel harassed, Jay?
I have been.
I've harassed Jay. I'm going to pass right up to it.
Oh, no, 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 no. It's only harassment if it's unwanted, baby.
That is true. He was rock hard when it happened. That's the hard thing about sexually harassing men is you can tell if they're lying. But now, and of course, we talked about it last week. I mean, it feels like in ages, there's so many new Weinstein stories that it feels like it's one of those. Has this been going on for like months? No, it's just like a couple weeks.
No, it's been going on for 40 years.
Well, it's been going on for 40 years. That's the big thing is that Bob Weinstein, who more than likely was the dude that gave the weapons hot command to all the news agencies and been trying to let everyone know that Harvey Weinstein is a serial rapist.
You think so? His own brother?
He was the one set to be. He's the one that's getting essentially primary control of the Weinstein Corporation.
Hmm. Right before it goes under.
And no longer is his big pushy brother. Well, it's not going to go under. Come on,
you think going to change the name or something?
It'll go through a slow quarter until this whole thing cools off. But come on, Roman Polanski's probably working on a movie right now.
Yeah,
and he's. Straight up child rapist. You've got Bill Clinton's still the patron saint of Hollywood. I mean, it's just that people don't care. And of course, also a whole bunch of a few other people have come forward and said, oh, I was sexually assaulted or raped by Hollywood producers, directors, but they're not saying who it is, but they're specifically saying it's not Harvey Weinstein, showing that.
I want him to say who it is.
I do as well.
I mean, if you're going to say, oh, I was assaulted by a Hollywood producer too, and you don't name the name, you're just virtue signaling.
Virtue signaling and propagating it because either you're saying I was sexually assaulted by someone who I'm not going to name. And it's just, it's the worst kind of virtue signaling, which is, I wasn't a victim, but I'm in a culture that honors victims. Right. So I'm going to pretend I'm a victim. That's the worst. But then the other thing to do is
what is happening?
Jay. Oh, Jay hit mute.
Oh.
Yes, what?
I was just wondering what is
Jay,
going on.
Jay paused to beat his children. Did you take off your shoe, Jay?
Carry on.
Maybe.
That sounds like a bathroom echo.
Kind of.
Jay might be pooping.
Well, so
it's fine, Jay. I'm glad you get you good colonic health. But also at the same time, like if in fact they were raped or sexually harassed or assaulted or whatever you have you, I mean, whatever it is, and you're not fessing up for it, you're letting the next woman say, oh, I'm working on this picture. Come on in and let's audition. And instead of getting an audition, they get a rape.
See, I almost wonder if it's one of those things. It's so pervasive.
It is.
And more than one producer has been involved.
It is.
I'm sure.
If saying I was raped by someone who is not Harvey Weinstein, you're putting everyone on notice that you're next.
Well, also,
or it could be bullshit.
There's the other thing is the Terry Crews came forward and said that some Hollywood whatnot went over and grabbed his wiener. And he was just like, my first instinct was to beat him to death, but he's like, I am like twice the size of this guy and I'm just trying to, break out of professional sports and into acting. And I'm not going to go and commit career suicide. Cause there's no way that like the world's going to just believe that, oh yeah, no, he grabbed my wiener and then I beat him up, of the giant black man and smaller dude. But clearly that wasn't Harvey Weinstein because that's not his thing. So yeah, it might just be like there's a handful of Hollywood producers that are kind of embarrassed that they're only into consensual sex. or maybe they occasionally engage in reluctant rape where they rape somebody and they're like, oh, see, look, see, she hated it and she's crying. Or they're hiring a hooker and saying, put on a good show. My friends are watching. You hate this. Yeah.
Well, I hope that the pedophiles come, you know, get exposed. That's my only hope.
Yeah. Like, well, there was that. There was the guys that passed around the Corys. I don't know.
Yeah, the Corys and God knows who else.
Yeah, they never came forward and said names. No. I mean, it was Michael Jackson who raped Macaulay Culkin. Made him go from being a great actor to a fucking train wreck.
Yeah, I don't know. There's some seriously wrong. But, you know, I've thought about these women coming out. Oh, you know, Me Too and Harvey Weinstein and Hollywood and rape culture. Of course, if that's all you know, if you're like a Hollywood starlet and you're surrounded by men like Harvey Weinstein, of course you're going to be like the Twitter feminist, like yelling about rape culture. I mean, because that's all you know. All you know are men like that.
Well, and then on top of that, like, I mean, are you guys like me? Like, when you like see that like a Hollywood star has finally died, are you like as gobsmacked if they have just like one or two spouses?
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like literally is one of those, like anything under like three or four, I'm like, wow, that was a really faithful one.
You know, what's really weird is like, if I was a Hollywood star and like had all this money and like, I would not get married. Like, you know, I'd be like, yeah, I like you and all, but no. Nope. Yeah. It just doesn't seem worth the trouble. I don't know. They like weddings, though.
They do like weddings. That's why they have so many of them.
That's how you get into People magazine, you know. You have a wedding.
And then a divorce.
And then a divorce.
All the PR.
Right.
Then another wedding. And then ever so often, I mean, they always got the at some point in time, they go, oh, I'll marry one of the ones that I had before.
I liked that one. Let's have that one again.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that one more time and then get divorced again. Like Elizabeth Taylor did that a couple of times. I think Larry King did that once.
I'm surprised she wasn't more of a scandal. I mean, was it a scandal?
It was a scandal.
Elizabeth Taylor with all her husbands? Was that?
Of course.
Like, how many did she have? Eight? Am I thinking eight?
I think it was bigger than that.
It was like,
I know that.
I think it was like 13.
Wow.
It was 143.
I mean, she was kind of like Frank Sinatra, where she had like weddings that lasted, marriages that lasted days.
She had weddings that lasted longer than the actual marriage.
Yeah. One, oh, not that many. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
Seven. Oh, okay.
One of them was Eddie Fisher.
Yep.
Carrie Fisher's daddy.
I think she married Richard Burton twice.
Yes, Richard Burton twice.
Yeah.
Very good, Brita.
I don't know why I know that.
Because you're a huge fan of Julius Caesar.
I did like Richard Burton, yeah.
So he was Mark Antony in that one, right?
But he's no Telly Savalas.
No. Did I mention this the last show about Telly Savalas' finger?
No.
Oh,
hold on a second, Peter. Let me dim the lights.
it's not as good as you think.
Let's put on some Barry White.
Hold on, Peter. Give me a moment for just a little pregnant moment where it is as good as I think.
It's not.
Just let me have this for just a moment before you take it away.
Okay.
Before you dash my hopes against the rocks.
Well, you should just Google Telly Savalas' finger. Because Mike and I have been watching Kojak, and in one scene in Kojak, I stopped. I was like, Mike, what? Look at his finger. Because he was like holding something, and it was clearly visible on the screen. And then we watched, what was that stupid movie I hated? Alan.
I Which one?
I was going to say, you have to narrow it down.
I know. Somebody's Heroes. It was like terrible.
Oh, Kelly's Heroes.
Was it Kelly's Heroes?
Yeah, Kelly's Heroes.
Oh, my God, that movie. Jesus Christ. And I know I'm going to get lambasted. Lambasted?
Yep.
I thought it was
anyway,
lambasted.
On the score report, but I hated that fucking movie. From the intro music, I hated it. And the only high point in the movie was Telly Savalas. Like, and he was wearing, a tank top in that movie, which, you know, God bless him. But Telly Savalas' finger. He was born with a deformed finger.
Yeah, little shrunken and twisted. I can see from the photos.
It looks kind of like he was missing a whole joint or something, like a whole section of the finger. Like, I don't know, but I thought it was really cool. Like, I noticed it in the movie, and I noticed it multiple times in the show, and they never bothered trying to hide it, which I thought was pretty cool. So, yeah. Sorry to ruin your.
Well, good for him. I mean, he was bald when it wasn't cool, and.
Yep.
Still not cool.
It is cool, Jay. You made it cool.
Yeah, it does look like it's super, super short and twisty.
Mm-hmm.
Like a duck penis?
Was it a pig penis?
That's
kind of like a pig penis.
That's what she said. Oh, my God. Wait. Pig penises are short?
Pig penises are twisty.
Huh.
And like, there's one of him as Blofeld. Not one of the better Blofelds.
Telly Savalas was Blofeld?
Yeah, in Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yep, he was the villain against the worst Bond ever.
Timothy Dalton?
George Lazenby.
Oh, okay. All right, Jay. I'll be there in about 4 hours, so we can
fight about it.
I love Timothy Dalton as Bond. Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton has all the acting range of Ben Affleck.
Yeah, but you don't need much. Like, actually, the key point, and Timothy Dalton has it down, to play James Bond well is you need to be a dick.
This is true.
That's why
Roger Moore did such a great job, because you just wanted to punch him.
No, Roger Moore was the worst.
Because you
wanted to punch him, but
Timothy Dalton just sat there. He might as well have been a cardboard cutout.
Oh, Living Daylights was such a
I'm trashing Weird's childhood, and I like it.
I was a teenager when that one came out. No,
my childhood was Roger Moore.
I saw James Bond in the theater. I think I was as old as my daughter is now. But yeah.
In other news.
Oh, what else we have in there?
We had Breeders Filler. That was a good one.
I want to talk about we got Breeders Filler. Let's close out with Breeders Filler, and we can go on to my little literacy thing if we've got time.
They're kind of like the same thing, really.
So, well, the big thing was my wife and I were talking about, I'm a huge fan of, not only Larry Correia's books, but his essay of why the literary program in the United States is making kids illiterate. I forget the actual title of it. Let me look it up real quick.
Wait, so the literacy program is making kids illiterate.
It's the same idea as his whole statement about all these, like, giving, you know, how they teach the classics and what they read in book stuff. And also what led to, like, the sad puppies whole thing is that the books that I read in, like, specifically like elementary school and middle school were all these like books that had these strong messages and set a tone and told, you know, of this and had a theme about them and all of that. But also they were boring. They were just boring, stupid, awful books.
Right.
And
were they all classics? Kind of.
No. Like the classics, we can make arguments on the classics. You know, that's not as bad. But I mean, it's one of those things of the, you know, is it really that important for like a high school kid to read Moby Dick?
No,
not that good a book, or the Scarlet Letter.
Tess of the D'Urbervilles.
No.
Or even I personally have not read it, but I've heard enough people, point out that although the Holden Caulfield one, Catcher in the Rye, is a vastly overrated book.
It is.
I never thought it was that good, really.
We could say a lot about classics, and I'll speak highly to classics. But at the same time, I think classics are really more advanced.
It's the same thing as movies, where the critics love movies and people hate them, and the critics hate movies and people love them. Critics are stupid. They're affectatious and idiotic. I mean, look at that fucking book that the critics love, Infinite Jest. It's the most god awful, ridiculous book ever created. The guy hasn't sold any of them except to the critics, and they loved it. And nobody else has read it, and it's stupid.
I've never even heard of it.
Yeah. No, like, my official number one. Now, to be fair, for a movie to get my number one worst movie, it needs to be a movie that I watched all the way through. There are dozens of movies, probably more than dozens of movies, where I have watched the first 15 minutes of and goes, this is a pile of shit, and taken the DVD out and sent it back to Netflix. But the worst movie I've ever watched is Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. It was pointless. It was insanely boring. It always it was heady. So it had like an air that they were telling you something, but there was nothing there. And it also had an air that something was going to happen and nothing happened. It was awful. It was
Groundhog's Day.
Ooh. Oh, Brita.
Yeah.
I hate that movie.
Oh, Brita. Brita, must you besmirch Harold Ramis?
I'm sorry. It is. I was angry at that movie. Angry.
But I'm going to say, when you look up reviews for Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, you find nothing.
Oh, I thought you said Snow Dogs.
Oh.
Oh, that's another one.
Yeah, that's a different kind of bad. But when you look up Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, because it's Jim Jarmusch and he's an art house director and he's done a couple of good things and a bunch of turds. And it's got Forrest Whitaker in it, and it's just got this, like, it's just done like so, like art house in the most, like, when I say art house, I mean it in the most cheeky way possible of the, wow, that's terrible. And there is nothing but positive reviews for this movie. Nothing but people saying how amazing it is. And it is terrible. It is just, there's nothing that happens in the whole movie. But we say all this, and it's absolutely true. It's a great article. I just did a quick search. I think Korea on the Classics is the title that I'm looking for in his blog. But either way, Larry Correa's got some stuff writing about how they teach literature in high school and middle school and all that, and how he thinks it's just doing nothing but making kids illiterate. It's teaching kids to hate books. We're going to force you to read these awful, stuffy books and talk about how awesome it is. And when you're like, it's not awesome, this sucks, this is the worst part of my week, and then someone goes, hey, have you read this book? This book is really good. They're going to be like, wow, you are doing a lot of drugs.
Books suck.
But I just realized something is we got talking and got talking, and I don't know how, Brita, how much interaction do you have with like the youth and young adults things in your library, and how active is it?
I have plenty of interaction.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing.
Are the youths like everybody else? They don't read books.
It's Utes.
The Utes. Well, they have, you know, reading list books that they have to read for school. And we have those. But we also have, you know, some kids that are really voracious readers. And they want to read all of the series of this. Or they want to read all of, you know. And kids really like series, I think. You know, book series like Percy Jackson series or the Captain Underpants. Harry Potter, for example. Hunger Games. Like, you know, they like series a lot. And they are voracious about the series. And if they get stuck in a series, like, man, you better have the whole series. Because they, you know, they get upset if you don't have them. And then, and we have kids that they also love graphic novels. I had a little girl. I mean, she's not little anymore. She's like middle school. She sat for like, I watched her today, and she was sitting at a table for over an hour reading a graphic novel, just by herself. Her friends were all like in a different room playing Magic the Gathering. And she was just engrossed in this graphic novel. So we do have kids that are really into reading. But we also have kids that, you know, you show them a book and it's like over 100 pages and they're like, oh my God, it's so long. You know, they don't want to read. They don't have the attention span to read and they don't want to read. And also, you know, you're talking about how, like, these school books that you were assigned in school were so boring and so awful and you didn't want to read them. There is a known factor going on in public schools where you have, and I'm going to say maybe not so much high schools, but I'm going to say, like, middle school age. You have a lot of teachers that are women, and they assign books that are interesting to women and girls. You know, touchy-feely kind of books and you know, all about emotions and messages and all this crap that boys just do not give a shit about.
I will attest that was absolutely my experience.
And this is so pervasive that librarians, and I'm not a young adult librarian anymore. I don't handle that collection anymore. But there was this trend for young adult librarians to really focus on trying to build collections of books for boys. And they're even promoted in, like, the book catalogs that we order books from. They're even promoted as books for boys. And it's to get boys reading. Because they don't want to read the crap that they're sent, you know, told to read in school. And because they're forced to read these, you know, books in school, it turns them off of reading entirely.
Mm-hmm. You get a Pavlovian response.
Right, exactly.
And I absolutely had that. I absolutely despised reading until I... See, it
you
was
have to choose what you two, wanted to
two,
read.
Two things. That, no, well, I mean, I could always. My dad is a voracious reader. I mean, there were tons of books available to me, and again, we had a fine library. You know, it's one of those, like, it's not like, you know, there's, you know, not getting to choose what you have to read. You know, it wasn't until I had heard some books on tape. Me and my dad used to drive up to Northern Maine, and he would get a bunch of books on tape.
Cool.
And we'd listen to those for the car ride up. And so I listened to some books on tape that were some Stephen King stuff and was like, ooh, I'm actually kind of into this. I wouldn't mind reading the book version of that. My dad's a huge Stephen King fan. So he had the full first editions of just about everything that Stephen King ever made for a long time. And so it was one of those, like, oh, I can pull that down off the shelf and just read that. And so, and of course, then of course I came across the interesting thing of Stephen King of the, wow, that was pretty good. Hey, you know what? Firestarters. That seems like that's pyrokinesis. That seems like a pretty interesting book. I've started Firestarters 3 separate occasions. And again, those who haven't read much Stephen King don't realize that no, he's either the best author in the world or the worst author in the world. I have no idea why the fuck that is.
Because he's two people.
Yeah.
He's sober,
Stephen King, or drunk Stephen King.
That's true. That's true. Firestarters was more than likely drunk with cocaine.
Yeah, could be. Or painkillers.
Yeah, whatever. He touched everything but the third rail in the 70s and 80s. But I kind of had that Pavlovian response until, yeah, I found a few things that I liked. But even then, I wasn't much of a reader until I went out to sea on a boat. And the only thing I could do was watch whatever movie everybody else was watching at the time and watch it completely out of order, or sit in my bunk and read a book. And so I would bring, it was one of those things. I would look at I would count up the books. I would make sure that I had 1,000 pages every trip, because I would go through about 900 pages of text every trip I was out there. And that was where I really got into reading. Well, that and getting a Kindle, where just now all of a sudden I could have like multiple books just in my like bag.
I think that's awesome.
And I could be like, you know what? I'm kind of losing interest in this book. I'm not saying it's bad, but I'm saying I'm not feeling it right now. Go grab another book and read that, or go grab something that I read, you know, a year ago. You know, here, I'm going to go read a really quick Lovecraft short story just to kind of get my juices flowing again. And then I'll go back to this nonfiction that was getting a little dry on me.
Weird has strange foreplay.
You don't know the half of it. But it's not true. I'm very dull in the bedroom. The thing that got me was I got thinking about like Harry Potter. And then with Harry Potter, you've got the Hunger Games and you've got all these, you know, series. Now there's a lot. There's way more stuff that is targeted towards elementary and tweeners.
Mm-hmm. You know, even like big authors like James Patterson, not that he writes his own books anymore, but like bigger authors, they also do series for young adults.
Yeah, but
Robert Heinlein.
But I was trying. I was trying to think of. Obviously there was. We got to step aside with the sci-fi and fantasy. That's kind of been like a. That's kind of a go-to, at least for boys. I don't know about, and I mean, girls, you've got like the, you know, Anne of Green Gables and, you know, those sort of things in there, but there are those like long running series type books, but there wasn't any real like contemporary mass market stuff like Harry Potter when I was of that age, and specifically of that very impressionable age of where I was kind of forming a path of what I felt about books. And overall, I formed an opinion that they were punishment.
Right.
And
you missed out on the Frank Dixon's Hardy Boy series and the Tom Swift Jr. And I mean,
that's true.
In the 40s and 50s, they made tons of series like that.
So that was the interesting thing that I was going on, is that I realized that like, I'm wondering if that, like, Larry Correa's essays on, you know, illiteracy, I wonder if they're not, if they're kind of like the global warming alarmists of the, oh, we, you know, an event happens and we draw a nest of curves around the event and have it be part of a continuing trend, when it could just be, there's a fire in California. It's going to burn and then it's going to burn out. It doesn't mean that there's going to be, because there's a fire in California today, there's going to be 5 fires in the, you know, in the West tomorrow.
I really think also there are multiple factors in the whole, you know, young adult illiteracy thing. Is you have to remember that kids today do not have as much free time as we did.
That's true.
Like, we didn't everything have the
internet. They got piles of homework.
Piles of homework. All the activities are like, you know, organized by the parents, and you have to go to this and you have to do this sport, and you don't have time to just be. And the times that, you know, I don't have a kid, I can't say, but from what I can tell in the library, kids are, you know, glued to their phones, or they're glued to their thing, or That's all they do. So they go to school in
the
morning. Did
you say glue to their thing? Because that
was their thing. Their
that was definitely true
thing.
For me as a teen.
Well, I'm sure that took up a lot of time too. See? You know, so you don't have time to just, they don't have time to just sit and read. And we have teachers bring classes in. Oh my God, this is the most ridiculous thing that they do. We're right next to the middle school. And so we have teachers who bring their classes in occasionally to the library, you know, probably because they don't have a lesson plan for the day or whatever. But they bring the kids into the school, into the library, and the kids have like 10 minutes to find a book and sit and read for 5 minutes. So the kids go get a book, and then they all gather together and they sit at a table and they read for like 5-10 minutes. And then they have to go back to the school.
Oh, that's crazy.
Right.
That's like, let's go to a video store.
Okay. Right.
Laugh at that term right there. And look, we got 5 minutes to go find a movie and you get to watch the opening credits.
It's exactly like that. And then they get hustled back to school. And it's like even sitting down and trying to enjoy a book that, and the book that they choose, they can choose anything in the library. You know, they can't, you know, pick adult, but you know, but they usually pick things that are appropriate for them. And it is their choice of book, something that they feel that they will enjoy. They get, even that is like really orchestrated and structured, and they can't just sit and enjoy their book.
Yep.
You know, but they're expected to take the book home, I'm assuming, but you know, it's, I don't know.
Well,
but going on the theory too is, so literacy just in the world is a fairly new thing. I mean, like, you've got like Adam Carolla is pretty outspoken about being at least formally illiterate. I don't know if now that he's written so many books, I mean, he's certainly not a literate person. But still, it's one of those like, but he can read. It's just, can he retain a lot of information? Can he functionally read? No, not very well. But like, you give him a newspaper, he'll be able to, you know, he'll be able to piece it together. It won't be pretty, but he can do it, you know. But you know, I think I'm trying to find out like how far back we have, you know, how recently we have to go back to, you know, is it the Great Depression, when like at what point was, where there's still like, where the dude that like the town handyman literally couldn't like, you know, read the name on the cover of a cereal box.
Hmm.
You know, literally, I could not recite the alphabet, and certainly could not name the sounds of the letters. And so therefore I cannot put letters together to make sounds.
Well, that brings up the, you know, the different definitions of literacy. You know, is your definition of literacy can read, comprehend, and understand, you know, 20th century novels?
Mm-hmm.
Or can they read the words on a cereal box?
Yeah.
Or can they read street signs? I mean, what's your definition of literacy? So yeah. I would say most everyone in the U.S. is literate as far as cereal boxes and street signs go.
Yes.
I think the people that can read and understand literature, however you want to define it, is probably about the same as it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
You have a certain percentage of the population that will.
Well, I'll disagree on that, because I think certainly if you go back to the Civil War, I don't think the same percentage of the population could read the, you know, quote unquote best selling novel at the time.
I bet they could.
I bet they could too.
Okay.
That's all they had to do.
That's right.
That is true.
Forget there was no TV or radio or anything.
Yeah.
So reading was like, that was the entertainment. So if you have like the entertainment factor to be an incentive to learn how to read, I'm thinking probably literacy was not too bad back then.
Well, either way, going forward though, what's interesting is that Generation X, which I'm kind of on the edge of, is like, they're which the edge? First. I'm a little young for.
Are you leading edge or trailing edge?
I'm almost between X and Y, or millennial, or whatever you want to call it.
So you're at the tail end of Gen X.
Yes.
J is Gen X too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
J. Weird. You know, it's really, it's odd how they there are some sources that try to place millennials as early as 76, and I'm like, what? No, you're retarded.
No,
you're literally retarded if you're, you know, 76. It's generally early to mid 80s up to 2000. Like my son literally like just misses the cutoff.
But either way,
I work with a bunch of millennials and we were trying to figure out exactly where the demarcation lines were drawn.
With specifically with Gen X, they are the children of the boomers. The boomers were the first kids to be raised in front of the TV.
Mm-hmm.
As in their whole life, there's more or less a TV. And, you know, again, before that, yeah, you're going to listen to the shadow on the wireless, or you're going to, or you're going to be reading a book. That is what or you're going to be going out to go see a movie.
Right.
You're going to be going to the picture house. Like you're going to,
or a dinner club or a, you know, yeah. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of,
there's also entertainment,
doesn't exist anymore.
But as far as sitting around your house and keeping yourself entertained before you fall asleep was radio and books, right? And that's it. Well, then you've got this new generation. And so kind of books were kind of a given, and really, you know, now it's talking about, is it good books or is it trash books? You know, books. Versus nowadays, like we don't care. Like yeah,
books is books.
Yeah, if they're reading a Sports Illustrated, congratulations. And no, the people who write for Sports Illustrated cannot read or write. My folks were the first people to pretty much their whole life have a TV. You know, my grandparents got a TV well into their adulthood. That was an adulthood achievement. But the kids got to enjoy that for most of their life. And the Gen Xers are the first people to suddenly have, like, all right, now the TV stations are going on around the clock. They're not closing at the end of the evening and just running a test pattern. And there's going to be, you know, infomercials and cable TV.
The Gen Xers are the ones. Yeah, the Gen Xers are the ones that had like cable.
Yeah,
right. Cable
instead of three channels.
Cable made it to my neck of the woods when I was 10, and where I lived. Weird. We're kind of out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine that, like, you know, Boston would have had it earlier. So, you know, I mean, I was 10, so I would imagine someone in the city could have had it even earlier.
And millennials are the ones that have had internet their whole lives.
Right. High speed internet.
Or just internet in general. I mean, you know, back in the 90s, it was all dial up for the most part. Most people didn't have dial up internet. Most people didn't have high speed internet back in the 90s.
I didn't have high speed internet until I was in college.
Yeah. But they had internet and they grew up with it.
That's so cute.
I know.
Internet.
I didn't have a phone when I was in college.
So millennials have pretty much grown up with internet and cell phones.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that for the Generation Xers, they've still got parents that see, and of course you talk about like, yeah, the Hardy Boys and the was it Tom Smith?
Tom Swift, Jr.
I read my dad's Hardy Boys. My dad kept his Hardy Boys books, and I did read those.
Rick Brandt, Nancy Drew for the girls.
Yep.
Bobbsey Twins, if you really want to go old school. Like the Dick 30s and 40s.
Trixie Belden.
There you go. That's an old one too.
That's before my time, but my friend in grade school had her mom's Trixie Belden's. Boy, those were good.
Fritz the Cat.
No, Jay.
I wondered who'd get that.
But the, so, I mean, my dad definitely read for pleasure and definitely didn't have the, maybe he had some horrible books foisted on him in school, but he still knew that, we still get to read the good shit when we're home. And even though he watched TV, TV wasn't that much of a competition because it was really kind of, when did TV stations
TV stations in the 50s would shut off after the evening news, maybe 10 o'clock ish.
Yeah. Before midnight.
Yeah. And then they play the national anthem and then they go to snow. And it wasn't until the 60s and 70s.
When did they go to the concentric circles and the Indian heads?
Oh, that's been all along.
Yeah.
Those test patterns. That's, in fact, it was always funny. I still remember stations signing on, and it'd be, there'd be a test pattern and a tone, and they'd sign on, and, you know, it'd be a big, you know, fan.
Oh, so it would be, the test pattern wouldn't run all night.
No. They don't run, they didn't run the transmitter all night. They'd shut they'd play the national anthem, and it'd go to test pattern or something, maybe, and then boom, transmitter'd shut off. And then all you get is snow until they start up again in the morning.
Wow. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. But radio stations used to do the same thing. Yeah. They'd sign off in there because, you know, for the most part, it wasn't worth paying. Everybody was asleep. It wasn't worth paying an engineer and the expense of running the signal and all that and content for when, you know, three people were up watching it.
Yeah. But so, I mean, so there was still good books. You know, my dad still read like good books that were marketed to him. Like there was a whole industry for it and there was no industry for me. So I kind of wonder if Gen X is kind of like a singularity on illiteracy where
it could be
where the older generations still were just like, why are these kids not reading? Like, just, I don't get why they're not reading.
They hit you with the book. Wham! Read this.
Well, also the millennials are reading the internet. Kid. You know, they might not be reading books, but they're reading the internet.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's god awful. Some of it's
a series of tubes.
Some of it's illegible texting, but at least they're reading.
Yeah. So I don't know. I was curious if Breida had some sort of trend. If I mean, obviously, there's going to be, you know, I mean, no matter where you had, like, I mean, I had friends that were just absolute, just voracious bookworms and just, you know, grinding through books.
But no,
you're
gonna, it gonna, hasn't changed.
Going to have that changed. Everywhere. I was just wondering if, like, specifically, it's kind of like the Malcolm Gladwell. I forget what the name of the book was because this is not the Malcolm Gladwell that I didn't read this one, but talked about, like, the key importance of being like Bill Gates was as young as you could be, but still understand computers when home computers were a thing. And so he lived his entire life with a home computer. And so therefore he was, you know, plus, you know, his just,
that's not true.
Okay.
He was in college before.
Was it that old?
Oh yeah. He was a Harvard dropout to start his software company, but that was for the very first personal computers. That was like CPM. He was doing he was writing software and programs to run on CPM machines loaded from paper tapes.
Yep.
And The whole starting of Microsoft thing was a complete fluke. I mean, his Microsoft was his company. I think he sold a compiler or something. I forget what it was that he actually sold, but the deal that got him MS-DOS wasn't even his. His mom was worked for IBM, and IBM was trying to create the PC and they needed an operating system. And so he finagled a meeting with IBM and went out and bought MS-DOS, what became MS-DOS, from somebody else, and then turned around and sold it as to IBM. And that's how they got their big start. And I think Breida has to go.
Yep, I got to go.
She's about to be eaten by Ronan.
That's true.
Rick, it's getting that time. But yeah, I got to go. But right. Good night, everybody. And we'll see you next week. And can we maybe hold my filler topic for next week?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Okay,
it's
cool.
Evergreen.
Okay. Well, I will have a great week.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
We can.
Night.
Night, Breida. I need to go just a little bit longer.
Yeah, I know. But I was saying. But overall, you got to remember, but Bill Gates was in college when before PCs existed as PCs. They were just toys that maybe a few thousand at most people were messing around with, and you had to build your own to get one. You know, you might buy a kit, but you had to put it together yourself.
Solitaire would be years and years before it came out.
Right.
I think solitaire existed.
You know, so when
it was it was analog solitaire.
So when Bill Gates was in you know, junior high and high school, computers were mainframes.
Right. They literally got bugs in them.
Right.
But, well, okay, that information shoots my theory all to shit. But also at the same time, it doesn't as well for. But it's,
well,
the idea is you can get pioneers in an industry by having someone who is born at it's both the born at just the right time when just the right technology hits.
Yes, and but so, they're usually adults.
Okay. But like for me, Harry Potter hit the scene and I read the books as well, but it was one of those like, these are entertaining and they're really more popcorn books because, you know, I'm a grown ass man, you know, reading a book targeted at tweens. So yeah, I can shit one out in a couple hours when I'm a pretty goddamn slow reader. But for the kids that were 9, 10, 11, 12, when Harry Potter hit there, or were 9, 10, 11, 12, when like three or four of them were stacked up in a row, you know, so they could really slam through them, and they were age appropriate, maybe a little, they were reading a little above their age level and challenging themselves to crank through these books, you know. And again, you've got all the Me Toos of the J.K. Rowling's making a mint. We want a piece of that. So let's get some more. Let's shake the trees and get some more people to write some books like this and market them as the next Harry Potter.
Right.
I'm just wondering if the essentially the kids that are younger than me, the kids that were, you know, 10, 11 years, you know, 15 years younger than I am, if they are much more avid readers as a whole, as a generation. Okay. Yeah.
My son hates reading.
I don't think so, Weird. And I'll go along with my theory is based on IQ.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a certain IQ in order to build a mental model around a novel in your head.
Ooh.
And there's only a certain percentage of the population that can manage that.
Wow.
And if you can't do that, you're not going to enjoy reading no matter what. It's not going to be like a movie in your head like it is for people that can build that model. If you can't do that, you're not going to enjoy a book. And at that point, reading is literally drudgery. You might read for information. You might read the newspaper. You might read Sports Illustrated. You might read, you know, for that kind of thing. But you won't read a novel for pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's strictly based on your IQ.
Oh, that's one reason why I love NetHack is... Oh my God, there's no video game around that has graphics as good as NetHack. Because
it's all in your head.
Yeah. Doesn't have any graphics. You just know that lowercase h, that's not a red lowercase h. That's a dwarf warrior coming at you.
There you go.
And I know what that looks like.
So that's why I have my thesis is that that is if you define literacy as reading enjoying literature, then the same percentage of the population will always be about the same percentage of population that does that.
Yeah.
Because those that can do it and those that can't won't, no matter what.
And again, look at Amazon. I mean, they're a bookstore. I mean, they've branched into a million other things.
Right.
But the only reason why I buy toilet paper on Amazon, and I do buy toilet paper on Amazon, but the only reason why I buy toilet paper on Amazon is because they made a shitload of money selling books.
Yes, but as the percentage of dollars spent on entertainment goes, books is a tiny fraction.
Mm-hmm.
You compare books, take the entire amount of money spent on books versus the entire amount of money spent on movies versus the entire amount of money spent on video games. And books is this little pinprick of a nothing over here in the corner.
Movies are a mile fart compared to video games.
Exactly. That's my point.
And the numbers I'm going off of are console video games. Like
right.
Actual, like going out and spending 50 yes. to 60 bucks
yes, yes.
on a game. Exactly. I'm not talking about the person who gets drunk at 2 o'clock in the morning and decides to buy a golden chicken in Farmville.
Right. But those make a lot of money too.
They make a shitload of money. That's the big thing is the free games. You know, the free games that you get on your phone, but hey, you can throw a few bucks at it to get a little of this or get a little of that.
Yep.
That's a different money-making model.
Right. But like you say, video games of all kinds, whether it's console games or, you know, smartphone games or whatever, are hundreds and hundreds of, you know, they're like billions of dollars. Movies are
gravy because
right.
movies cost
a lot to make and like they don't make
millions, you know, and millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Video games cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to make and gross more money.
Yeah. I think the margin of return is much higher on video games.
Much higher.
Your distribution costs aren't as high either. But that's why a lot of the studios are doing this. You know, they're starting to do the direct to Netflix,
your Netflix
and direct
originals.
To Amazon, because they get the same sort of profit margins that video games see. They don't have to, you know, they don't have to pay theaters to put in all the theaters. They don't, you know, all this stuff. They don't.
Also why they're doing series now instead of movies.
Oh yeah, of course.
Just make a
franchises.
You know, Yeah. Make a franchise instead of a movie. It's gonna cost less. I mean, once you build the sets,
right?
You've built the sets.
Yep.
So that's why there's so many like big budget, amazing TV shows right now, is because it's a more profitable margin. And with this whole like streaming thing, people prefer it.
Of course. In fact, I save up like, Even shows that aren't on Netflix that would normally air on, like broadcast TV, if I actually watched it, I'll like save those up and then watch them, like spend a weekend watching like 15, 20 of them.
The binge watching is nice.
Yeah. So anyway, I think it's going to change the, you know, how entertainment is consumed, just like everything else changes, you know, radio changed how people do entertainment. TV changed it. Broadcast cable TV changed it. Now the internet changes it, you know?
Oh shit. Alan, your theory about the IQ thing. That's the reason why old timey radio is gone.
Yeah.
It's because dumber people can't.
Yeah.
Can't see Johnny Dollar getting tuned up with a blackjack.
It's much more difficult.
Oh, Johnny Dollar.
Alan, if you want a series to binge, I hear this Firefly's good.
I've heard that.
Oh, too soon.
Alan, if you want a series to binge, there's a series called Johnny Dollar.
I was always a Shadow fan.
The Lone Ranger, I hear, is all the rage.
I like the Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Oh, Marlowe.
The Great Gildersleeve is funny too.
Great Gildersleeve is pretty funny, but I'm definitely one of those, like, when I hear the when I turn on the radio classics on the satellite radio, I'm always for a moment I'm like, oh, Great Gildersleeve. Does it have to be a comedy? Why can't it be a smoking, drinking detective who's going to get the shit beat out of him with a blackjack? That's absolutely my speed. That's absolutely my speed. The Dashiell Hammetts
you know what? I always thought that being a Foley artist on an old time radio show like that must be the best fucking job ever.
Hmm.
I don't know. You'd be jumping around like a monkey.
Yeah, think about it, man. Ah! You're punching the side of beef. You're slamming the the door. You're doing, I mean, you're making all this kind of stuff and you got to do it in real time. You can't, you know, you, there's no pausing. There's no waiting.
There's no dubbing.
Yeah. You can't do it in post.
By the way, near me, gentlemen. there's a restaurant, just a little pub and with really good food. And I remember we were sitting there in there and looking across the street, and across the street was an appliance store. And above the appliance store, it obviously had additional space above the appliance store. And there was a handwritten sign, or it was letters pasted onto a piece of cardboard for a detective agency with a phone number on it.
Oh, nice.
And I'm like, oh my God, that is absolutely like that is Sam Spade up there. Like, I guarantee he's got an office that has a sink, no secretary. His hat's hanging up on a hat stand. He's got it's 11 o'clock in the morning and he's always already got a buzz on. And there's just an ashtray that is like got 14 pounds of cigarette butts in it.
One would hope.
But no 38 special revolver because it's Massachusetts.
That's right.
Jay.
Yeah.
How many 38s did you own in the state of Massachusetts?
All of them.
Yeah, you had like at least a dozen. Was it a dozen?
Close to it. If you count 357 Magnum, it was a dozen.
I'm talking about just 38. Will not chamber 357. I know I saw your Moroku on Shooting Illustrated.
That's right.
I remember flipping through the pages and I'm like, hey, that's a Moroku 38 special. It's got the shit beat out of it.
God,
Moroku. I think I might have held that. Jay, did I hold this gun?
I'm pretty sure you shot it.
No, I never shot the Moroku.
Huh. You got three Colts.
Ugh. Do you still have them all, or did you let him go?
I'm up. I have not let a single one go. Not the old ones. I mean, I let the Bodyguard 38 go when I moved, but I got another one, so it's okay.
Wait, your model 38, the blued one?
No, the Bodyguard 38, the new M&P.
Oh, the what's it?
Yeah.
The
model 38 actually
the polymer frame revolver.
Yes.
Wait, but you got a new one?
I got another one.
Why would you get a new one of those? They suck. Wait, I'll keep Jay from getting fired.
No.
I'm sure they're fantastic.
But it's perfectly fine. It's a good gun. It's just I have so many and I never carry them because they're revolvers. So
I was carrying a revolver today.
Well,
you know what I need? Speaking of revolvers. And I have been unable to find, and I don't know why.
You need to
why.
Contact Dennis to get a good holster for your Python.
You know what? Dennis doesn't know how to make a holster for a Python. I already talked to him about it.
You can't get a blue gun for that?
I don't know, but I've looked, and I find like there's like a sort of quasi-decent DeSantis that's meh. And there's Galco's got one, and it's also meh. And I'm like, come on, does nobody make a decent holster for a Python?
Have you looked at El Paso Saddlery?
No.
Check them out.
I don't want to spend $10,000 on a holster. I don't want to spend more on the holster than I spent on the revolver.
That's not possible, Alan.
No, I'm not so sure. I've seen their prices.
I suppose if you were to... If you were to make it out of panda.
I want a nice outside the waistband holster that's not like a drop holster. I want it like up, you know.
You want a Western holster.
No, I don't want a Western holster.
Yes,
that's
you do.
That's what
actually,
I'm saying. I don't want one. I know it's a
Python, by the way, Alan,
but I don't want a Western holster.
You're not gonna believe this.
What?
I'm on Ring's website and under Colt. You can have any Colt firearm you want so long as it's a 1911 if you want a blue gun.
Yeah, see?
And that's nutty.
Yeah.
You can't even get a Colt American.
Alan, Jay. Go to El Paso Saddlery. Look at their number two thumb brake. It's $96. They have it for the Python.
Really?
Yes, sir. You're welcome.
You heard it here, folks. And it's a thumb brake.
Old farts love those.
Let me see this. All right. Y'all hang in there if you're not. All right. So I'm looking at what holster?
I went to, it's the number two thumb brake is what they're calling it. Oh, if you just go to holsters and what the hell was it? Hunting Field.
Strong side. Right.
And then strong side.
Number two thumb brake. Ooh, that's a nice holster.
There you go.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Colt. Government 1911 is the first choice.
Yep. But they've got, I mean, unless you have the,
oh, there's unless you have the, six. No, I got a 6-inch.
You have a 6. Okay, cool. Yeah. I was going to say, if you have the 8 3/8, you're shit out of luck. But,
and I for need example, a left hand.
The Trooper. Ooh,
black.
I'm screwed.
I definitely want black.
You're a softball, Alan?
Yes.
I think I knew that.
I don't want cross draw. Ooh, forward cant. No, I don't want Ford Cannon with a 6-inch revolver. Good Lord. I want neutral. Forward Cannon. It's going to be like a tail sticking out behind my butt.
Yeah, no kidding. And you'll have a pommel in front of you.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, $96. Right. Nice.
See, there you go. Under 100.
Awesome.
And they make a hell of a holster, too.
All right, thanks, Jay.
So now that I've done my good deed, I am going to get going.
Yeah, we need to quit. We're 23 minutes over. So
yeah,
the people that like their bonus minutes are really right. happy right now.
And
and the people that play the drinking game where you do one shot every minute after the 1 hour mark
are dead.
They're fucked up right now.
All right, we'll be back next week with more fun and games.
All right, same squirrel time, same squirrel channel.
All right. Good night, internet.
Bye.
Good night, internet.